This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs.
Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well.
Hello, baby boos. This is episode number 33 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And we are back, hopefully in a healthier condition. Hallie and Katie, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling better.
I've got infection coming out my eyeballs. Literally.
What is going on?
Well, I had the stomach flu for, like, a good solid, like, 4 days. Like, puking all the time. Couldn't keep food down. And then I got over it, and I was starting to get better. I was like, okay, we can do this. We can do life. And then I get all congested afterwards, of course. And I get a sinus infection. And then I thought I had pink eye, but it's actually my sinus infection coming out my tear ducts of my eyes. Oof. And so my eyes get all crusty sometimes, and they're all goopy and pink, and they look really, really pretty. And we're not doing the best, but still here.
Oh, well, I appreciate you coming out.
Yes.
That reminds me of the time I used to sleep in my contact lenses. And I would get eye infections because my eyes were so oxygen deprived, and my eyes would get like bloodshot red, and they would get really soft. Like you could like if you close your eyes and you like rub your hand over your eye, it still feels like there's some substance there. But like when I would have these eye infections, I could almost like push it in, and I would get really light sensitive and really temperature sensitive. Like the cold was really bad for me, and that was like the worst I can think of that's happened to my eyes. But I've never had like things leaking out of them. Like, that just sounds grisly.
But if you sleep in your contacts, do they, like, go into your brain? Or is that just, like, a myth? Like, if your eyes like roll back, do they get trapped?
I have had that happen before, but not from sleeping in them. I did have that happen one time. I think I was just joking around with a friend, and, like, I hung my head off the couch, and somehow they went, like, whoop, and that happened. But typically, if I sleep in them, I just wake up with my eyes crusted shut. So like I have to just like wipe away the sand from sleeping, but other than that it's not that bad. But I just remember some of those eye infections that I had, and I had to wear like a patch like a freaking pirate, and you know, I would go to work and they're like, what is your deal? And I'm like, yarr, I'm a pirate. Just try to make it fun, and it never really went off. So
it's like Halloween, I hope you every feel day.
pretty much. Well, I hope you feel better.
Thank you. I'm sure I will. I'm on the mend, but it's just kind of been a miserable road so far.
All right, so Woman of Excellence this week is a young lady named Lexi Medler. She is a level 2 judge from Toledo, Ohio. Lexi was at GP Indianapolis and played Abzan, went 8-1 on day one.
Nice.
Surprised herself, even. Like, some of her hashtags were like, I'm supposed to be bad at this game. I don't think you are, Lexi. So she went into day two, finished 14th overall with a 12-3 record.
Sweet.
I know. She's also hinted about getting into content creation. She had an offer from Hipsters of the Coast to write a tournament report for them, and she's also started streaming. You can support Lexi on Twitter. I believe she is Kintree Spirit, at Kintree Spirit, and she's also starting to stream at twitch.tv/Kintree Spirit. Speaking of GP Indianapolis, it was a standard event. Top 8 consisted of 2 Abzan decks, 1 blue Abzan deck, which is Abzan, but it basically just splashes for Dispel and Negate.
I've seen that a couple times.
Okay, I'm not really sure if that's worth it, but we can certainly touch on that. 1 Esper Tokens, 1 Red-Green Landfall, 1 Bant Hardened Scales, 1 Esper Control, and 1 Bant Megamorph. What did you guys think of this Top 8?
I was surprised by the lack of Jeskai.
Yeah.
Because I was watching some coverage on day one, and it just seemed like Jeskai against Esper over and over again. And to see none of them make the top 8 was really surprising to me.
Do you think that it had a target on its head? Like, people came prepared for it, or people found a way? I know we've talked about how exactly do you beat a deck like that. Do you think that people figured it out?
I think that's definitely possible. I didn't really get to watch enough of the matches, but it seems like you know, Abzan is coming to the forefront, and it's also a very well-rounded deck with a lot of good matchups, so I guess that's not too surprising.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I took a look at the Heart and Scales deck. This deck is really something. So for those who don't know, I'm just going to go ahead and pull this up here. It is banned Heart and Scales, and the deck revolves around an enchantment called Heart and Scales, which costs one green, and if one or more plus one counters would be placed on a creature you control, that many plus one counters are placed on it instead. So the deck seems to revolve around things like Mana Gorge or Hydra, Hangerback Walker, Avatar of the Resolute. This deck has been kind of like on the fringe for a while, and now it seems like it's a thing. Like, what do you guys think about this deck?
It almost reminds me a little bit of the heroic decks that we used to see, where they're building these gigantic creatures and protecting them with Stubborn Denial, Feet of Resistance, and Valorous Stance. And I'm not sure if it's going to be as consistent as those decks, but it's definitely not a bad place to start.
Mm. Yeah, it seems like a deck you'd find at FNM and not in the top 8. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a mean way to put it or not, but like, it's Mana Gorge or Hydra is a 3-mana 1/1. Like, I don't, it just seems kind of, I guess, a little like slow. Like, it could be explosive, it seems, but I don't know. It seems like it would have a kind of a tough time, like, I guess I'm just having a hard time putting all the pieces together in my head.
Well, to be fair, though, I mean, people can play an O2 Jace for 2, and that gets to live.
I guess that's true.
Well, I mean, look how many people were like, what are we going to do about Jace? And it was like, ultimate price? Silk Wrap? And like, you know, people, you know, there are those creatures that just sort of get under the radar because their removal either isn't that great or, you know, it's a removal that is very specialized. And so, I mean, if Jace can thrive in this format, why can't a Mana Gorge or Hydra?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was talking to a friend earlier about the relative lack of Valorous Stance in this format. It seems like it's slightly underplayed, and I think this is a deck that can definitely take advantage of that by building enormous creatures, and when your opponent just sort of has a Wild Slash, it's really no good against some of these things. Mm-hmm.
This also looks like an affordable deck. Like, I'm not really seeing anything terribly expensive. I mean, Hangerback Walker is about 15 a piece now, mm-hmm. and Den Protector can be about the same. But otherwise, I mean, Canopy Vista, Flooded Strand. Okay, so the fetches are a little pricey, but the rest of it seems doable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other decks that I found very interesting, I have to say, I really like Red-Green Eldrazi. Like, I really think if I were to go out and build a deck tomorrow, I would probably pick that. I just worry about the Atarka Red matchup. Like, it doesn't seem like there are really any options for if you're facing a really fast deck, because you spend so much time ramping. I just worry that, you know, Red would sort of kill me by the time I get there.
Mm.
So, I'd have to think about ways I could do that. Did you guys see Andrew Cuneo's Esper deck?
Mm-mm.
Okay, this thing was the thing of beauty. So he was playing Esper Control, but no Jace and no Gideon, no Hangerback Walker, no Uga, none of the usual suspects. He ran 2 copies of Obnixilus, 2 copies of Narset,
hey,
2 Planar Outbursts, 1 Duress, 4 Stasis Snare, 4 Silk Wrap, 2 Quarantine Field, a Silumgar's Command, 2 Clash of Wills, 3 Ojutai's Command, some of the other usual suspects, but a Felidar Sovereign in the sideboard? Hmm. I mean, my God, like, this thing was just so spicy, and I have to say, this made me want to play Control.
Mm-hmm. It looked really
Did he do well?
Came in 31st.
Nice.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So not bad at all. Some of the other spicy things, he had Pearl Lake Ancient in the sideboard, we haven't seen that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
He had a copy of Virulent Plague, 2 copies of Infinite Obliteration, and 1 Blighted Fen, which is one of the new sacrifice lands from Battle for Zendikar.
Mm-hmm.
I really like this. Like, do you think that, you know, when you look at an Esper Control deck that's not playing the usual suspects, like, does that make you want to play it, or are you thinking, like, what are you doing?
Want to play it.
Makes you want to play it.
Yep.
I think that Narset is going to be, like, pretty well situated right now. Like, I know a lot of people weren't a fan of it before, but we have so many neat tricks now that it seems like, you know, being able to minus and get rebound and all that kind of thing is going to be really advantageous right now in Standard.
Mm-hmm. But isn't that something that Jace can do too once he flips, or is this different?
This one can do it right when you play it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, yeah, I love Jace. He's my homeboy, but Narset's, like, right on top of it.
Yeah. Okay, so Jace is more of a, once it's in the graveyard, you can use it, and Narset is as it's happening?
When you cast.
Okay. Okay, I can see that. So, yeah, I would totally play this. I was also interested in Paul Rietzel's white-black control deck. He was running 3 Gideon, 3 Obnixilis, 2 Sorin, 4 Hangerback Walker, 4 Seeker of the Way, and then just Duress, Read the Bones, and things of that nature. I would play that, too. Mm-hmm. So where do you guys see Standard going from here? Because there was an article posted on MTG Goldfish by Saffron Olive, who's been killing it in the content game, and he says that this is the most expensive Standard since Cobblade. And he goes on to say that, you know, that there really hasn't been an expensive Standard since Cobblade, and even if there was, there were still what they called safety valve decks to sort of keep that format in check. And one of the examples he gives is Jund Midrange, back when Olivia Voldaren, Huntmaster of the Fells, and things like that. Jund was $695-ish to build, but we had things like Mono Red that cost only $107. So there were things to keep decks like that in check, but in this format, you're basically having to ask yourself, am I willing to plunk down $500 to be competitive or not? Do you think that this is true and that this can keep up?
Yeah, I'm definitely feeling the pressure to keep up as I look in my drawer and only see 2 Jaces and 2 Gideons. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is true. It does kind of feel like they're the new Jace the Mind Sculptor and Stoneforge Mystic in a way. I mean, not every deck wants all 8 in one deck. But it is tough. And I think it is definitely odd that there isn't really a mono-red deck in the format, and that the one pseudo-mono-red deck, Atarka Red, is so expensive to build. Mm-hmm. I know a bunch of people I know in my community who play more casually or are newer to the game have taken up Mono Red because it's a cheap strategy traditionally, and they don't want to spend the money on the Wooded Foothills and the Cinder Glades and the Atarka's Commands. So I don't always know what to tell them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I have not purchased any Jaces yet or traded for any, and I'm worried that as time goes on, he'll just get more expensive, because it seems like, you know, he has been popping up in Modern and even Legacy, and, you know, I don't foresee a reprint in the next set of exactly him, so I don't know when to buy him, if I should just buy him now and eat a big bullet, or wait and hope for a miracle. I'm not sure.
Now, what does that do for you two, Hallie and Katie? Because you are more competitive girls, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, Chris and I love our games, but we're certainly not trying to really get on the train or anything. So, you know, what does this do for you two? Like, are you, I know, Hallie, you recently built Abzan. Mm-hmm. You know, do you feel sort of stuck with that deck now? Or, you know, like, what does this do for you two?
I don't necessarily feel stuck with it. I am sad that I wasn't able to get Gideons for it. I'm mm-hmm. sort of making do with more removal spells in the build that I'm playing online, and I'm hoping that, you know, I can win enough drafts online that I can somehow, you know, turn that into tickets, which I can then turn into Gideons or whatever. I know in person, it is tough. One thing that I'm thinking of doing is GPC TAC is coming up this weekend, so I'm thinking of, you know, going and playing in as many side events as possible so that I could get prize wall ticks and use that to get cards that I need. But I understand that not a lot of players have those resources, and I'm sorry for the ones who don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right now, I have most of the cards to play Abzan, and I could do that, but that's not really what I want to be playing. And so, right now, it's kind of like, who can I borrow some Jaces for this tournament? Mm-hmm. And that's not a great feeling, because, you know, if I'm testing with that deck and I have the Jaces proxied, and then I want to go to a tournament and I can't get the Jaces for it, then it's like, well, this deck is a lot worse than it could be. So it's definitely kind of limiting. And if I do end up purchasing them, then it's like, well, I better play these Jaces till they snap in half or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with what Saffron was saying. You know, I think that's part of the reason that I haven't been interested in standard is because when you ask me that question of, are you willing to pay $400 to really play in this format? And I understand that you can certainly play, you know, budget brews, but I always try to at least break even, mm-hmm. you know, in tournaments that I go to. And a lot of the budget brews I've seen, I'm really not sure that I could even do that because the decks that are on top are so good. And so when you ask me, you know, are you willing to pay this much to play in a format? The answer is no. And it's not that I'm being mean or I'm being shitty, but like, you know, if you were to say to me, are you willing to pay $400 to play Legacy? Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, I can wholeheartedly say that. I have no problem plunking that money down for like an Enchantress deck or even a Storm deck or even with Modern. You know, I had to pay for the Serum Visions and the packs for Ad Nauseam. No questions asked. I was completely willing to do that. But with Standard, when I look at that red-green Eldrazi list, it's just like, oh, four copies of Ulamog and four copies of Hangar. I don't want to do this. And to me, that's a sign that I don't want it bad enough. And so if I don't want it that bad, I'm really just not going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially when it might, like, maybe it is a fad and maybe in a month or two it'll just kind of go by the wayside. I mean, I don't see Jace doing that in particular, but you never know when you're investing in a standard deck if it's just going to be on the back burner next tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at least when you're investing that money in like an older format, you know the deck's pretty much not going anywhere. Like, I knew that Ad Nauseam would be a thing regardless, and I know that Storm will be a thing regardless, and you know, and that's some consolation. But you're right, you know, I may pay for these cards, and then all of a sudden it's not even a deck anymore, and then I'm back where I started from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Chris, what do you think about Saffron's thoughts, if he had to sort of name a culprit for why Standard is so expensive? He puts a lot of the blame or the focus on fetch lands, and by saying that, you know, you put more fetch land, you put fetch lands in a format along with these new dual lands, which can be fetched up with fetches, which makes them, you know, more popular, and therefore drives up the demand, which drives up the price. Do you think that's true, that the fetch lands are to blame for this?
I think having them both together is definitely an issue. I don't really have a lot in the deck that I'm playing right now, but I can see where, you know, if you have to have all the fetches and you want to be able to play multiple colors, you're going to need to spend like a shit ton of money to get the fetches if you don't have them, plus the dual lands, and it just makes everything just even more powerful, just from what I've seen from some testing that I've just done lately versus other people. And I can see where it could definitely get out of hand. And I can also see why they would maybe not want to reprint the other fetches. Like, I know a lot of people are like, oh, well, maybe we'll get them soon. Well, if this is already a problem with fetches and the dual lands they've already released, I mean, I think that if they release the other fetches everybody wants at this point, it would be a bad thing for Standard. I'm fine with it for other formats, but not for Standard right now. And even with, you know, the price of most of the decks, I mean, I could build Abzan, I could build Jeskai Black right now because I have pretty much all the cards, except for, like, one Jace, so I have at least three. But, like Katie said before, I don't know if I would want to play those decks. Like, I'm perfectly fine with just putting something else together right now. It might not be as, you know, good as what everyone else has, but I have to kind of evaluate that. And again, why drop a bunch of money on a deck that's going to rotate out in a matter of months. Mm-hmm.
The one thing that blew my mind was he brought up this point of that fetch lands and battle lands let people play all the most expensive cards mm-hmm. in the deck. So we have these decks that are running, you know, and even the two-color decks are playing 11 to 12 fetch lands. Mm-hmm. They don't even play that many in Modern. Like, why do y'all need that many fetch lands? Like, I'm not an expert. Like, I'm not a deck builder. I'm not a mana builder. I'm not Frank Karsten. But when I read that, I was just like, why? Like, I mean, I played Jund in Modern, and we ran four Verdant Catacombs, two Marsh Flats, and two Wooded Foothills. We ran eight. Mm-hmm. And even that was pushing it. Like, I can't help but wonder what people are thinking with these mana bases. Like, ugh. Mm-hmm. And then if they're playing the four or five color decks, they're playing upwards of 12 or 13 fetch lands. Like, it's just insane. Mm-hmm. So, in better news, there was an announcement made at GP Indianapolis that we are going back to Innistrad.
Yay!
Shadows over Innistrad coming out April 2016. You guys excited?
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited. I guess I'm a little cautiously optimistic since when we heard that we were going back to Zendikar, the bar was set really high, and I'm still not sure that BFC has quite reached the height that Zendikar was. So I'm hoping that they can kind of, you know, deliver on Innistrad because the first incarnation was so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I yeah. wouldn't mind if they reprinted Snapcaster.
So you and everybody else.
Jolly good.
You can just go to an RPTQ next year and get you the cool looking Snapcaster with the dreadlocks and everything. Those are dreadlocks,
right?
I
plan on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There you go.
I thought it was funny that we were just talking about this last week, you know, and the podcast came out on Friday and then Saturday was like, oh, we're going back. And I was like, oh, a lot of us had never drafted that, so that'll be great. We can all draft it.
Mm-hmm.
Not the same thing, but, you know. A close approximation.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to go back. You know, I would like to see, I was fine with Undying. Like, I would love to see some Giralf's Messengers shenanigans again. I was really okay with Flashback, because Lord knows I put some of those in my graveyard decks. The one thing I absolutely don't want to see is I do not want to see any Miracle.
Because
Lord knows they snuck that in during Avacyn's Restored, and look how well that turned out.
Great.
Fucking one yeah. mana board wipe. No. I was eating Terminus all weekend. I was not a happy camper. Are you guys keeping up with more of the flavor side of things? Like, there were people that were watching that trailer and sort of speculating. Like, some people think that this means Emrakul is on Innistrad because of how the feather turned out. I think it's just tree branches, to be quite honest. But there were people speculating, like, what's going to happen when we get there. Like, have you guys thought about that?
Not really. I was more just speculating, like, ooh, what if they reprint the Innistrad lands? Those will go well with the battle lands. Like, that's where my mind is.
Yeah, I would like to see the characters, you know, like they did Drauna, but she was different Drauna. Like, I'm anxious to see, are they going to do, like, a different version of Olivia? Oh. Are they going to do, like, a different Avacyn? Like, just sort of seeing, you know, maybe it's just me being a Vorthos, but just I'm looking forward to seeing new versions of old characters that I really enjoyed.
Yeah,
was
that would be cool.
Tybalt in that set?
Yep.
Yes, he was. Maybe Tybalt could be good.
Mm-hmm. Maybe there would be a good Tybalt. Probably not likely, but...
There was also speculation that Tameo might come back.
Oh, that'd yeah, be cool. I like Tameo.
Yeah, Tameo's a really popular blue planeswalker that I would love to see more of, so I wouldn't be mad if she came back. Mm-hmm. That card was frustrating to play against. I remember that from my standard days. Like, ugh.
Do you guys think that they're doing, like, too many Return to This Land type things? I know I saw a lot of people that were like, yeah, it's cool, but I'd like it if we could just quit going back.
Did you see the memes that people were coming up with? Like, there was one that was like, you know, Revenge of Kamigawa, Revenge of Umezawa, because who else do you know from Kamigawa? Like, you know, there was like, you know, Clouds over Dominaria, and then there was one that I saw that was like, oh, I don't know, let's go back to Ravnica again, and that was like the name of the set. There were so many good memes out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think from a story perspective, it might be cool, because I know... some Wizards folks have said on panels recently that they feel like they've left too many of the planes in bad states, and mm-hmm. that they kind of feel obligated to go back and finish some of the stories and, like, tie up some of those loose ends. So I guess it'll be interesting to see what they do with that.
I could have sworn, I'm actually looking this up right now, somebody asked Mark Rosewater about this, and he said that they now do blocks 50% new and 50% returns. That means sometimes two new or two returns will be back-to-back. And he said that Zendikar was new, original Zendikar was new, Skaris was a return, Innistrad was new, Return to Ravnica was obviously a return, Theros was new, Khans was new, Battle's a return, and Shadow's a return. So that looks plausible when he puts it that way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Interesting.
I mean, it looks like, yeah, it looks like there were four new and four return. These two just happen to be next to each other, or these three?
Mm-hmm.
Or no, the two, Battle and Shadows, be next to each other. I think it's fine.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at least they're choosing, like, really popular realms. You know, it's not like they're like, oh, we're going back to Ice Age, where, you know, nobody liked Cold Snap, or that would just be a bad deal.
Yeah, people have been joking about, like, ooh, what if we go back to Homelands?
Do it right this time.
Yeah.
Right? Autumn Willow forever. I used to love Baron Sengir. He was one of my favorite cards. Yeah. This past weekend, there were also two modern events. There was SCG Dallas-Fort Worth, and there was Grand Prix Porto Alegre, which I believe is Paulo's home city, so that was kind of cool. Modern experienced some shakeups. At SCG Dallas, the top eight consisted of one green-red aggro deck, one burn, one zoo, one green-red Tron, one Infect, one Amulet Bloom, one Elves, and one Abzan. Meanwhile, in Brazil, two Naya Burn in the top eight, one Naya Zoo, one Bant Zoo, one Bogles.
It's gonna have to
one
stop.
Shut it down, Katie. Shut it down. One blue-red twin, one living end, and one green-red Tron. Where did all this aggro come from? Like, zoo decks were sort of the decks that we never really saw in Modern, and they really turned out this past weekend.
Yeah, it was interesting for me to look at some of the red-green zoo decks, because red-green zoo was my first Modern deck from 2 years ago, so it was like, oh, there are my Curd Apes, and my Flint Hoof Boars, and Gore Clan Rampagers. It's interesting to see just how much Atarka's Command has kind of pushed that deck over the edge. I think it really gave it some of the closing speed that it needed, because if I remember correctly, I mean, I was really bad at Magic when I played that deck, but I remembered feeling like Affinity was just such a better aggro deck if I was going to be playing aggro at the time. But I think now that you have the right balance of, you know, burn and pump and going wide and everything, I think it's a lot more resilient than it used to be.
Mm-hmm. And to be fair, I mean, there really aren't many board wipes in Modern. I mean, Jund occasionally ran Anger of the Gods, and then they have Maelstrom Pulse, but it's like, you know, you really don't see Supreme Verdict. You really don't see Damnation or Wrath of God. I mean, Pyroclasm is a thing, but even then it's only 2 damage, which doesn't really phase a lot of these zoo decks. I mean, it does seem like there is an opening for these decks to push through, and it looks like they did that this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think this will last?
No.
I'm not sure. I mean, I think people are still going to be trying to make the Knight of the Reliquary retreat to Coralhelm thing work. I mean, that was a thing in the Bant Zoo deck, sort of revolved around that. So I think people will still be trying to make that work. I think the format will sort of counter-correct, just as it always does. I mean, I think these aggro decks were kind of a reaction to people seeing that, A, there weren't a lot of board wipes, and B, you know, sometimes if you go fast enough, you can outrace the combo decks. Yep. So I'm sure that we'll adjust again, and we'll see a new crop of decks in a couple weeks.
Yeah, Willie Eel was saying on Twitter that, you know, largely in the Brazilian area, Porto Alegre, there just weren't many combo decks. Like, it was purely a local thing, and so that the local players loved them, you know, some burn and some zoo. So that might be part of it too. But then when you look at the Dallas results, you know, they were kind of similar. You had these fast decks, and Cedric even said, I was watching the coverage, and he was like, this is going to be the fastest top eight we've ever had, because it was like Infect versus Tron. It was like zoo versus zoo, or zoo versus burn. Mm-hmm. They were all just these really fast matches. And so it was largely the same, even though they were in different locations. I thought that was interesting, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I could see if Porto Alegre was all aggro, and then you go to Dallas, and it's like Tron, Twin, Jund, all these slow decks. But the metagames were pretty much the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were some really spicy decks in Dallas. Yeah. I was looking through some of the top 32. First of all, got to give a shout-out to our girl Serena Quinn.
Yes!
She came in 26th with Bend and Snapcaster.
Yeah, I told her if that name didn't work, if she didn't like that name, I said she could call it Bolt and Snap, or you could be like, Bolt and Snap! And like, that could be... And she was like, oh, I like that. So either way, grats to her. She came in, what, 26?
26th, yeah. Oh.
Yay!
Not far behind her, I see there's an Allies deck.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
That seems kind of cool. I know Robert was trying to make Allies work in Modern long, long time ago, but now it seems like Lantern Scout is, well, might be what it needed, and I see it's playing a Fire Mantle Mage also, which is the one that gives things menace.
Mm-hmm.
So this could be a real deck. It seems really interesting. And then there's another deck that I saw that uses Footsteps of the Goryeo? Mm-hmm. I don't even know what this does.
I faced this last night. I've actually faced this before. I got the chance. Shaheen Sarani is a really big advocate for this deck. He loves it. I played him on Magic Online playing this deck, and I was devastated. I faced it last night on stream. I was doing another test stream, and you don't know how hard it was for me to keep my composure facing this deck, because I'm on camera and I'm recording, so I couldn't say what I was really thinking. But so, for those who don't know, Hulk Footsteps is also known as Bubble Hulk, and it revolves around a card called Protean Hulk, and if you've ever seen Protean Hulk, you'll understand why it's called Bubble Hulk. Protean Hulk is a card from the original Ravnica block. It costs 5 and 2 green, and it's a 6/6. When Protean Hulk is put into a graveyard from play, search your library for any number of creature cards with total converted mana cost 6 or less, and put them into play. So you want to do something to get that into your graveyard somehow. And then you play a card called Footsteps of the Goryeo, which costs 2 and a black, return target creature card from your graveyard to play, sacrifice it at end of turn. So when you put it into play, and then when you sacrifice it, you go looking for a combination of, like, Body Double, Mog Fanatic, Revelark, and Viscera Seer, something to do with those cards. And inevitably what happens is it creates this chain where you have a bunch of something, and then you sacrifice them to Mog Fanatic, or you sacrifice... It basically kills you with, like, 20 Mog Fanatic triggers. But it forms this loop, and I can't really think of, like, the finer points, but Shaheen Sarani has written about it. And it's just this ludicrous combo where you're looking at all these cards, and you're like, what the F? But it happens, but it works, and it's one of those combo decks that's very hard to... You have to, like, specifically, like, what... Maybe Leyline of Sanctity, because it might turn off the Mog Fanatic, but you're just not really sure how to attack it. And then it goes off, and you're like, oh, shit. And it's a thing. It came in 12th place, and Lord knows I faced it last night. So if you're looking for something spicy, this is certainly it. Oh, man. Organized play changes. Star City Games made an announcement the other day that there are going to be some changes coming in 2016, and there were quite a few of them. So I'm only going to talk about the ones that I think are relevant to us and the events that we are likely to play in. So the first up, IQs and Super IQs are now going to have a 2x Planeswalker Points modifier.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Which is nice. They also will no longer award open points. I'm still not even sure what these points really do.
Nope. They're for the Invitational and the Players' Championship.
Okay, because they had, like, a flow chart, and it was like, you know, if you have this many points in the first quarter, blah, but they're perpendicular to the second quarter, divided by the unilateral of the blah, and there's, like, little people holding trophies, and I'm like, what? Like, I felt like I was dealing with that math problem where it's like, you know, if train A is going so fast and train B is coming from Toledo, what are you going to eat on train B? Like, I have no idea what's happening here. They also said that they are going to be handing out retired Open Series mats as they're giving them away as random giveaways of the IQs and Open Series, IQs and Super IQs as well.
Yay.
So, Chris, if you're into playmats, mm-hmm. go start playing in more of those.
Yes.
Canada is going to be getting their own version of these state championships called provincial championships.
That's cool.
So that's kind of cool because Lord knows I know I've certainly heard stories about how, you know, Canada certainly doesn't have as many events as we do and they're not as close as they are to us, and that's cool for them. Mm-hmm. We are getting regional championships, 2 standard and 1 modern, which is cool. So we can go see where they are in relation to us and maybe attend those. The biggest changes that I could see, fewer opens in general. They basically echoed WotC in saying that, you know, events have sort of blown up and it costs so much to run them that by doing so many of them that they're sacrificing quality. So they're going to be cutting back on the number of opens that they have, which seems to make a lot of sense to me. They specifically said that there are going to be less opens on the West Coast. Mm-mm. Which made me feel really bad because you guys don't seem like you get very many to begin with. Hallie, what did you feel about that?
I was sad, but I did feel like this was a long time coming. I know for those of you who don't live in Seattle and maybe haven't been following this, we in the past have had 2 Star City Opens a year, generally 1 in the spring or summer and 1 in the fall or winter. And usually one of them was an invitational, which brought a lot of players to the area. And we have a big legacy community here, so that gave our players something to look forward to every year. And the last two Star City Opens that were supposed to take place in Seattle or the greater Seattle area were moved to other states. We don't know exactly why. We don't know if it was a problem with the vendor or with the state or anything. I don't know. But there was one that was supposed to take place in Seattle that was canceled and moved to Portland. And then another one, which is taking place next month, which was supposed to take place in Seattle and was moved to Las Vegas. That's where the Invitational is happening now. So a lot of us in this area sort of saw this coming. And, you know, obviously we're sad about it. But it seems like there's been almost like a rallying cry among like the local TOs and the local stores to, you know, have our own tournament, not necessarily our own tournament series, but sort of fill the void that Star City Games is leaving, and sort of do our own thing. You know, there are people who want to play in more large tournaments for, you know, cash or store credit prizes, and it seems like at least the wheels are turning to get that sort of thing going. So I'm hoping that, you know, even though SCG isn't going to be around, and, you know, we like their events, we liked, you know, the quality of events they put on here, we're hoping that this will turn into a net positive for the community.
Mm-hmm. I just feel bad because, you know, I'm really fortunate in living in the region that I do, where it's like there are several paths to getting where you want to be. Like Jeff Hoagland, for example, he prefers the Star City Circuit. Mm-hmm. You know, he's somebody that you really don't see playing in GPs very much, if at all. And, you know, you can sort of choose the way that you want to go about it. You can still be competitive. You could still be a pro without going, you know, down the GPs to Pro Tour route. You can grind opens. You can just play in invitationals. And, you know, I can't imagine what it's like to not even have that option available where, you know, you are either going the official route or you just have nothing at all. Like, that's terrible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially for people like you, Hallie, who really love the game and want to get better and you want to grind,
yeah.
You know, and giving you less ways to grind is just a real bummer.
Yeah, I mean, I still like SCG and I still like their events, and I hope that, you know, now that I know you guys and other people who live in other parts of the country, that it will be possible for me to travel to go to SCG events. I mean, traveling can be a pain, but I'm hoping that, you know, every now and then I'll still get to go to one.
It's less of a pain with friends.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we had a pretty good time at the last one.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of, you know, winning money at events, they announced that the Classic Series, those are the events that you play in on Sundays, the weekend of an open, are no longer awarding cash prizes. Yeah. You will only receive tickets from the prize wall, which they will now be having at every open. A lot of people were upset about this. They were like, you know, I am not driving to an event just to win 1,800 tickets. Like, this is not worth my time. What do you guys think about that? Like, is that enough to deter you from going to a Classic event?
So is that what they're going to consider to be, like, the 5K? Like, if you want to play Modern or Legacy in, like, a site?
Correct. So, like, if you were to go to an open and the main event is Standard. So the main event happens on Saturday. Day two happens on Sunday, obviously. And then they usually have the whatever formats the main event wasn't. You know, so like if you were at a Standard Open, you could play in the Modern 5K and the Legacy 5K on Sunday. These events are now being called Classic events, but they no longer offer cash prizes.
Mm. Well, yeah, for me, it's a big deal. Oh, sorry, Haley.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, for me, it's maybe not that big of a deal because it depends on what they're giving away at the prize wall. But for people that, you know, they're really, you know, more serious about playing maybe than I am, you know, getting that money and having the shot at it is a bigger deal to them, so I can understand why people would be upset.
Yeah, it seems like it would, it doesn't encourage, I guess, local players to come to the open as much as cash would, I think. But I think for somebody who's already going to be there, it's not a big deal. Like, if I traveled to an open and now I get tickets instead of money, like, okay. I mean, I might be mad if I got, like, first place, and I was like, oh, I could have had this money, but they changed it. But if I'm just, like, an average person that's placing somewhere in prize contention, then I don't think tickets are a horrible way to go.
Yeah, I'm looking at the rewards. So they posted a link to GP Atlanta. I assume the prize well is going to be the same. So you can win, you can buy booster packs with tickets, you can buy From the Vault sets, you can buy Fat Packs pins, including Penny Arcade pins from 2013 packs. You can buy play mats from the SCG Creature Collection and the Grand Prix exclusive mats. There you go, Chris. You can buy sleeves. You can buy deck boxes. Gear, so you can buy t-shirts, bags, and cases. In addition to that, you can buy tokens of the SCG players, which you can't normally do. Commander's Arsenal, Commander decks, complete sets. San Diego Comic-Con, Planeswalkers, and Uncut Sheets. So these aren't bad. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't mind this at all.
Yeah.
The other big change that people were really upset about was the lack of Legacy. They took Legacy away as a format for the Invitationals, which led to cries of the death of Legacy, about how, you know, not only did they take it from the Invitationals, but they've decreased the prize support by not offering cash for the Legacy events. Do you think that's accurate, that this is going to negatively affect Legacy at all?
I guess I think it's possible that it could negatively affect Legacy, but I think a lot of the people who are quick to point their fingers at SCG and say, oh, SCG is killing Legacy, forget that SCG was probably the tournament organizer that held the most Legacy tournaments to begin with. And I think, you know, you have to give them credit for all they've done to support the format. And it's sad that it's not always, you know, as financially viable or as it doesn't bring in as many players as it does, you know, if you offer a standard event or a modern event. Those formats are growing just so much faster than Legacy is, just because of the card availability and the prices. But I think it's unfair to criticize them for holding fewer Legacy tournaments.
It does seem like there's a general feeling of Star City, you know, getting other people involved. You know, you'll see it with a lot of the other changes. So, for example, they said that they're going to allow other vendors to sell at their events, and they're going to be, refocusing on having artists come and things of that nature. And it sounds like they're allowing other TOs to possibly step in and not have this monopoly that they've had for a while. And I think people will step up to the plate. You know, we've certainly seen Bazaar of Moxen overseas. They just recently announced that they're going to be stepping up their Legacy events, and they're going to be offering Legacy. Eternal Extravaganza, which happens on the East Coast, is a well-run event that offers Legacy and Vintage. You know, if the people really want it, there are TOs and even local game stores that will find a way to make this happen. And I appreciate that they're allowing people to have that opportunity. You know, I feel like people have gotten kind of lazy, and that's just, oh, well, why should I bother? Star City's already doing it. It's like, but you can do it too. Like, you know, you can be TCG player and have your own events. You can be Channel Fireball. Hell, even Gathering Magic could probably do that if they really wanted to. And I'm all for that. You know, I'm all for other people getting a slice of that pie. Card Kingdom, even. Didn't they recently say they were going to start having, like, 1Ks or something?
That is sort of in the works, yeah. They do also, I mean, Card Kingdom does support Legacy a lot. They stream Legacy every Monday night. And they're looking to potentially have larger Legacy tournaments if there's demand for it. So, I mean, depending on what their resources are and what they're looking to do, I think that would be a great thing.
Yeah, like, I would certainly travel to those. I know next year I've already started looking at the GP schedule, and Columbus is the only American GP for Legacy. And because there are so few Legacy events, I'm completely fine, you know, making that my one voyage that year and being like, you know what, I will absolutely go to this one event, versus, you know, when there's 50 standard GPs, you're like, I can afford to miss one. But when you know that's your only shot to play, people will turn out, and I think that's a really great thing. So they also said that when you win an Invitational now, you will get a ticket to the Pro Tour. So cool. If you are somebody who, you know, is able to play in Star City events and that's something that interests you, you can sort of get on the Pro Tour, you know, in a different way. So that's really cool. So, Katie, I'm hoping that we'll see you on the Pro Tour that way.
Oh, I hope to be seen on the Pro Tour, too.
Just putting you on the spot there a little bit. Our listener question this week, send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. This one is from a friend of the show. He is Bruce Richard, who you might know from Gathering Magic back in the day. He writes the Serious Fun column on the Mothership, so you can check him out there. And Bruce says, "Ladies, I run pre-releases for a group of young players in the Boston area. I know Aaron looks forward to my articles after the pre-releases with pictures of the little guys playing Magic." I really do. He used to do these photo essays with all these adorable children playing Magic in a library, and it's really a sight to see, but I digress. Bruce says, "The group started with three of the boys creating a Magic club. Attendance went through word of mouth. The kids still run the weekly meeting, and I now run the pre-releases. I regularly sell out, and we are seeing new players all the time. This has been going on for 5 years. In those 5 years of running pre-releases, we've only ever had one girl attend. She was the younger sister of one of the boys. She attended two pre-releases and then stopped coming. Her brother also stopped coming shortly after. What can I do to encourage more girls to play? The only advertising I've ever done is sending out an email to the parents of the players telling them there is a tournament coming. My regular players sign up, and parents pass on my email to their son's friend's parents. The boys are having a great time, and I would hate to think that the girls are missing out. The only idea I have to specifically mention that girls are welcome in the next email I send out. Any thoughts or suggestions would be welcome. Thanks."
So I'd like to start off my response with an anecdote. About 2 weeks ago, when I was on my way to F&M, I got a text from a friend of mine, and he said that, as he was walking around, not far from where our local game store is, he said that he overheard a bunch of teenage girls complaining that they wanted to learn how to play Magic, but they had no one to teach them. Which was kind of funny. He said that he, obviously would have offered to teach them, but that would have been kind of creepy.
Hey, little girl, you want to learn Magic?
Yeah. So when he told me about this, it made me wonder if maybe the problem is that a lot of young girls know of the game and are interested in it, but maybe don't have access to it or don't have people to teach them. I know when I taught the Girl Scouts about a month or so ago, most of the girls that I taught had heard of Magic or knew people who played, but they just didn't have anyone close to them who was interested in teaching them or anyone they could learn from. So I guess one suggestion I have is, if your son is involved in a Magic club, maybe if the club holds some kind of a learn to play night, it doesn't have to specifically target girls or, put up flyers that say girls are welcome. But I think when you say learn to play, that makes it seem more open and it makes more people interested in attending. I know when we do, learn to play, at conventions, it's through the Lady Planeswalker Society, but we're under the Greater Wizards umbrella at, places like PAX, and a lot of women will come up and ask to play, ask to learn how to play, even though we're at, such a large convention. So I think advertising for something like that, a learn to play thing, would probably bring in more girls. Another thing you could do is, if the club is headquartered at the school, I don't know if it is, but maybe doing more advertising through the school would bring in a wider variety of people.
I think that his idea of putting that girls are welcome in the email, maybe just something subtle, are your sons and daughters looking for a new game to play? And it's just inclusive to both genders, and that way it's not if you got little girls, you should bring them here to play Magic, and it's not really getting in their face about women are welcome. And I think that another thing, especially, I don't know how old these kids are, but women in Magic, I think, like to see other women in Magic. And so I don't know if there's any local players that are females that maybe aren't associated with this club, but, come to F&M or something, and maybe encouraging them to come to a pre-release so that if a little girl does show up, she's not like, oh, I'm in a room full of big germy boys, there's somebody else here that is like me. And I think for little kids, that's a really, really important thing for them to have. And so if you can get somebody else involved, maybe that can make them feel more comfortable, that might be a good way to keep them coming once they do show up.
I agree. Definitely having someone to kind of emulate would definitely help, I think. I was thinking about this afternoon, and I was thinking that for, like, if I had to put myself in a position where I was like, okay, you're a little girl, would you want to play Magic the Gathering? And I guess it all depends on, you know, maybe how my parents act to me at home. Like, I remember not that long ago, I heard a woman tell her son, well, that's a girl's toy, like, don't play with that or something. And there are still some people that kind of have that attitude that they believe that certain things are only for boys or certain things are only for girls. And so I think if you're raised in a household where you don't have restrictions like that, that definitely helps to kind of broaden your horizons into what your interests are going to be. I remember my cousins were like 10 and I was 10 and I'm like, what the hell are you guys playing? They're like, Magic the Gathering. And I was like, this looks complicated. I'm out. Like, I just like was not about it. And it took,
that's before they told her you could use play mats.
Yeah. And, you know, I just think about even my own personal journey getting into Magic several times before I stuck with it. Like, I had to be me myself, like, in the right mindset to accept the game and, like, want to be interested in it. Like, I think having an interest in, like, fantasy elements or, you know, an interest in, like, the math involved or just, like, the flavor text or, like, the way the cards look, you know, that's definitely going to play into whether or not someone wants to be engaged in it. Especially, you know, if they're a little girl. If they have, like, friends that maybe wouldn't want to play Magic the Gathering that are girls, that could maybe deter them. It's hard to say. I guess, like, because you, like you said, you don't want to target them specifically and be like, hey, girls are welcome, P.S. But I definitely agree with Hallie about the whole learn to play thing. People feel better about knowing that someone's going to teach them how to do something as opposed to, am I going to show up to this and just, you know, have people be, like, rude to me or crush me or something? Is this going to be fun? And if you feel like you're on somewhat of an even playing field, it would probably make you feel a little more assured as a new player.
Yeah, I agree with Chris. I think that you definitely don't want to, like, you don't want to market specifically to them, because a lot of times when people do that, it's usually very obvious ways, like, you know, pink and butterflies, and we're going to draw Nissa with big anime eyes, and I didn't even, I think I rhymed there, didn't I?
A little bit.
But yeah, okay, I didn't plan that, but, you know, basically trying to make it to be something it's not, and, you know, and then you risk possibly turning off the boys, and not every girl likes pink, so that's a, you know, that can be a trap in and of itself. But I think if it were up to me, I would possibly try maybe appealing to the parents directly. Like, if you know that you have a little boy who comes to your events and you know he's got a little sister, you know, you might just want to gently nudge the parents and be like, you know, just so you know, the event is for, you know, she's welcome as well. Or that, you know, have you thought about maybe bringing your daughter as well? And, you know, just trying to get them included in it. Because, you know, like Chris said, this is something that, you know, parents may look at this and think it's just for boys, or my little girl wouldn't be interested in this, or, you know, maybe they've never tried introducing her to it. And so, you know, if you get the parents to reconsider that, that might go a long way towards getting them to come as well. Because there are still those feelings of this is a boy game, this is a girl game, and getting parents to keep an open mind, you know, might change the outcome.
I think that you can also encourage parents to stay, like, if they need some kind of comfort. Like, sometimes the gender divide when you're little is just so big that, you know, girls are like, boys have cooties, and you have all that stuff going on when they're little, and I think sometimes they just need somebody there that's, you know, comforting to them, rather than a parent that's just like, oh, drop them off, I'll be back in 8 hours, have fun. And they're just like, oh, okay, well, okay. And I think just having somebody there that can be that comfort to them could be important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's actually a store in my neighborhood that runs F&Ms for kids. Most of them are between the ages of, like, 10 and 15. And a lot of the time, you know, some of the dads will stay and actually play with the kids. They'll play in the tournament, and it's a pretty good environment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you think that it might help? I don't know if this is something that Bruce, you know, can do, but do you think it might help to see a woman there? I don't know if that's something you guys covered, but, you know, if you, I know sometimes we've talked about you walk into a room and there's 1,000 guys at a GP and you're like, you know, there is nobody like me. I wonder if that's something a little girl might experience. If you walk into a room and see 20 boys and then an older guy running the show, you know, maybe that would, you know, deter her?
I'm not sure. I think it depends. I think for a lot of girls that may be the case. I know, speaking from my own personal experience, like, Tiny Hallie was really into the idea of being the only girl doing whatever. So I don't know if that's true for a lot of girls, but I don't know. I think it depends.
Oh, man. I'm trying to imagine what Tiny Hallie looks like.
I had a really big head and pigtails.
Oh, that's fantastic. I would imagine little Katie had, like, big eyes.
Oh, my God. My eyes have just always been, like, I demand an alien picks. Size. You'll get a Snapchat later.
And I'm just imagining little Chris with, like, big glasses.
Oh, my God. I had them. And, like, a Keith Sweat, like, t-shirt and... Everything, braces. Oh man, I'll post a pic later, I promise.
I have to say, I'm kind of imagining you to be a spin on Sadness from Inside Out.
My hair was really curly, like back then, before I got it straightened, so I had this big, like, poof, and my bangs were like a poof, and it was just crazy. Oh my God. Childhood is terrible. Oh, yeah.
I could tell you some poof stories myself. Like, because I was a redhead, I used to get a lot of Ronald McDonald references, and then there were these kids that they would see me, and they would go, I'm Ruff Ruff with my Afro Puff. And I was like, what does that mean? Like, I didn't understand. And now that I'm 32 and I've seen some shit, I'm like, oh, you weren't kidding. Like, oh, I know what that means now. But I do appreciate that Bruce is trying to get girls into the games. I know we spent a lot of time discussing how to get women into the game, but, you know, it is sort of a different thing when you're talking about girls and children and how to cater to them.
I was just going to say, it just reminded me of, like, this video that I watched once where they gave boys and girls a Barbie doll, and then they gave them this other doll that had more, like, realistic features and asked them which one they preferred. And they preferred the one that had the more realistic features because they could identify it with it more. They're like, oh, well, this looks like my mom. This looks like my sister. You know, this looks realistic. This Barbie, like, wears her, like, legs. Like, we don't understand this. And so I think even in, like, this situation, if you had someone that was doing, you know, something that you're interested in, it could definitely try to get you more involved so that you're less, I don't know, concerned about maybe what other people are going to think or about if you're going to like it. Like, there's that little safety net. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if 10-year-old me would go in a card shop. Something tells me I'd be in the bookstore. So,
final thoughts before we close out the show.
Oh, I have an announcement.
Ooh, we both have things. Go ahead, Allie.
Okay. So my announcement is that, this weekend is a GPC TAC. I was initially thinking of playing, but then I got a really cool opportunity. I'm going to be helping the text coverage team for Wizards of the Coast this weekend.
Yay!
Yeah.
That's fantastic!
Yeah, so while the GP is going on, you can go on the event coverage website, and you can, you know, where you usually see all the articles about the matches and everything, and I'll be writing a couple of articles so you can read them.
Cool.
I'm so excited for you.
I know. I'm excited, too.
Are you going to be the person that has to, like, describe the matches where they're like, you know, so-and-so dubiously top deck the thingamajig and valorously prevented the blah?
I think they're going to leave that to Stibbs, probably, but I'll be doing some interviews.
Oh, wow. Cool. That's fantastic, Hallie. Mm-hmm. Hey.
And I wanted to give a shout out to Brooke, who won his pre-TQ, so he is queued to go to the RPTQ.
Yay!
It's kind of been a long time coming. He's also been a bridesmaid many, many times, but he's judging our next doubleheader that we're having, so I get to play with his deck both PPTQs. So I'm gearing up for that as soon as exams are done, and hopefully we can be travel buddies.
Yay. I'm just imagining him, you know, coming home from that event and be like, you know, hey, baby, I won. And you go to hug him and you're like, yay, as you're like reaching behind and like taking the deck box, like, goodbye. Like, and he's like, well, you don't want to hear about my games? And you're like, nope, I need your deck. See ya.
When Hallie and I tested, I had the deck here. And then the next day he texted me and he was like, could I get that back? And I was like, what? You don't even go to Magic tonight. I know, but I need it.
Okay. He just wants to hold it.
Yes. He just wants to stroke his judge lands.
There is a lot of money in that box. He probably thought I'd lose it or have Watson chew on it or something. So,
oh, or get some of your sinus infection on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no doubt.
Like, here's all my germs.
Take them back with your Jaces.
So does that mean that you're going to sort of refocus so you can join him?
Yes. Yep, I do plan... My last exam is on Tuesday of next week, so I'll probably do some testing on this weekend, and then also a ton next, like, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and it's on Saturday. So we will see where that gets us.
Very cool. Very cool. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can ask to join my Facebook group, Ladies on the Grind, for female magic grinders. we now have over 30 members, and yeah, there's a lot of productive conversation going on, which is great. And you can read my articles here on Gathering Magic. And this weekend you can read my articles on the Wizards of the Coast website. Yay!
Woo!
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. And my mugging is getting even meaner with my infected eyeballs. You can also find me on email, katie.neal14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is TEHKRIZ. That's to Chris. My Gmail is YOTEHKRIZ. That's yotochris@gmail.com. And my Snapchat is Cryptic Command with K's. I've been enjoying all the pics. I expect one from Katie any second now. So, yep, send me cool pics.
When you said that you were mean mugging with your, you know, with your sickness and your eyeballs, I immediately thought of the teacher from Daria.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch Daria?
Yeah, the one teacher that was, like, all crazy from, like, Vietnam or whatever.
There was the male teacher, Mr. DiMarino, I think it was, and he'd be like, hope you don't crack! And he'd, like, say one word really loud and his eyeball would bulge and just, like, really randomly. Like, I'm just imagining that's Katie, you know? Maybe playing some Jace Finn's Prodigy and her eye just jumps out at you like, holy shit. Crazy. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That is OriginalOestrus. You can email me at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket, and you can email us your questions and feedback at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.